Preliminary findings emerged last month from UC Berkeley, showing that the percentage of all students nationally who report being diagnosed or treated with anxiety disorder has doubled, from 10% in 2008 to 20% in 2018. I'm here today with Dr. Eric Nelson, licensed clinical psychologist and the director of counseling and psychological services at Westmont College, to talk more about these findings. Thank you for being here, Eric. Can you tell me about what anxiety disorder is and what problems can stem from anxiety disorder?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's important is to parse out anxiety from anxiety disorder. When there's a disorder, that means that there's more functional impairment. So someone's going to have, if they have anxiety disorder, it means the anxiety is so bad that they're not going to be able to perform their usual functions as well. So maybe they're reading a book and they're trying to study and they can't focus as well on their studying. So they read a whole book and they can't remember what they read or a chapter or something like that. So maybe they're an A student because their anxiety is so bad they can't perform. So there's an impairment. That's when it becomes a disorder. I think what's important to note though too is that though we're seeing higher levels of anxiety disorders, we're also seeing higher levels of anxiety in general. So they might not meet like diagnostic criteria for a disorder, but there's still a lot of anxiety and tension. And even moderate levels of anxiety can make life less enjoyable, a little bit harder. You think about stress, you know, everyone feels stressed or there's a lot of pressure, but oftentimes that stress or pressure gets worse to where it becomes more like fear-based and where we start to worry about, well, there's so much going on right now, I can't manage all of this. And so we start to fear, what does this then mean for my life? What does this mean for my future? If I can't pass this class, if I can't finish, you know, work out this social relationship with this person, everything is lost. And so anxiety can really, that's when it starts to go just from stress to anxiety to become an actual disorder.
What's causing students to become more stressed out and anxious?
There's a lot of theory and reasons out there that people are looking into. I'll just briefly say a few. You know, some people are saying there's more pressure from an earlier age. And so now you'll find kindergartners, first graders, and parents are anxious. They want their kids to be as good as the next kid over. And so you'll see little kids getting tutors or getting special assessments to make sure they're as performing as well as others. So there's more pressure to achieve even for little kids. We also see another reason is college students, more than any other college students in the past, are hyper-connected. So they're hyper-connected usually through their digital device to their friends, to their peers, and also to everything that's happening around the world. So a lot of people want to blame social media, and it's not all social media, but there still is a part where people have to think about their social presence, you know, how they demonstrate and portray themselves to others. And then there's also that piece of when you're on social media, you're constantly seeing everybody doing awesome, incredible things. Like people don't typically post like, my life today is kind of boring, or this is a really terrible thing that happened to me. Usually it's like, I'm in France sipping coffee with my new boyfriend, you know, and it's like people, so then other people feel like, oh my gosh, I'm not achieving these awesome things that these other people have. Another reason is people talk about parenting trends being different. We're kind of growing out of that range of time where the season of everyone gets a trophy. So it doesn't matter if you're the worst team or the best team, you're all getting a trophy. And in ways it's done in good nature of like, we want to protect people. We don't want to hurt their feelings. But I think what's happened is these trends in parenting and these trends of raising children, I'm not blaming the parents at all. It's kind of the society really. Our attempts to protect our kids from experiencing negative emotion. So then when they go into college, we've set them up to when hardship happens, when failure happens, they experience these emotions they're not really ready for, don't really know how to cope with because other people have been protecting them. And so fear of failure is such a big part of the anxiety trends that we see. And if I fail, then that means I'm going to lose everything. The older I get, the more I know I fail at a lot of things. And that's just kind of a part of life. But a lot of college students haven't been prepared for that. Another thing is, and some of these I'm talking about are bad. There's some other positive reasons too. I'll get to here in a second, but, we almost are in kind of an Amazon culture now too, where there's expectation that you want something, you can get it delivered. I mean, Amazon just switched its delivery tomorrow, you know, but I'm like, that's great. Now I don't have to wait for 2 days and get it tomorrow. And so we want what we want and we want it now. And so, even Tinder or online dating, it's like, you can find that person right away. Unfortunately, and in college, you really learn this, is that the things in life that truly matter, like a meaningful life, a long-term relationship, a meaningful career, those things take a lot of time and a lot of heartache and a lot of failure. And so you really, this is one of the places in life where you really learn that there's a lot of hardship in the way of getting to what you want to do in life. The last thing I'll say on this too, what we're seeing on college campuses too, and I've heard this mentioned elsewhere, almost like this race to the bottom, meaning that you're rewarded if you push yourself so far that you're rarely getting sleep, that you're overcommitted. You know, I know on college campuses, it's almost like a good thing. If you're taking 20 units, you're involved in two internships, you have two jobs, and you never get sleep and you never have time to take care of yourself. It's almost like, oh, wow, like that's so great. Reality is, you know, that can be a very unhealthy lifestyle and can lead to significant amounts of anxiety and just fatigue in general.
Do you think that the number of students who are being diagnosed, that number is increasing because there's less of a stigma surrounding getting help nowadays? Like, that definitely plays a part in these numbers, right?
Absolutely. That's, to me, is one of the more encouraging things, is that students feel like they can go and sit with a stranger and say, hey, this is what I'm talking about, a therapist, but really who's just a stranger, and say, hey, this is what I'm struggling with, and can you help me? They're more comfortable talking with their friends and saying, hey, like, I deal with this. And then their next friend over will be like, oh my gosh, like, I went through something so bad a year ago, and this is what I did. And so we're seeing a lot of the decrease in stigma be a real positive thing. There are parts of this too that make me a little bit wary as a clinician. I am seeing more people start to identify with a mental health condition. And so while it can be really good to have decreased stigma and to say, hey, this is what I deal with, sometimes people, I think, over-identify with it. So it's like, this is who I am. I am a depressed person. And we also want to think about it is that, you know, while we may be more prone to depression, that's not the core of who you are. And so being able to identify that there's more to you than just being depressed. But in general, this decreasing stigma has been a really, really good thing for students.
And what do you find that your clients or students are most stressed out about?
You know, it's such the gamut, such the range. And I think a lot of it has to do with anxiety begets more anxiety. So you get some anxiety and or one of the things I think about too is like free floating anxiety. So you get anxiety about this one topic, and maybe it's a class or a test or a social situation, and then it gets resolved. And you would think, oh, now I'm feeling so much better. Maybe you do for a day, but it almost like floats over to the next thing of like, oh my gosh, now if I don't get this internship, then it's not going to work out. Or, oh my, I'm graduating in a year, or I'm graduating in 4 years. What am I going to do? You know, that fear. And so a lot of it can be some of those things, but anxiety begets anxiety, just that it, when we're anxious, you know, cortisol is released in our body and it likes to kind of feed itself. Our bodies get more triggered by things that could be stressful or problematic.
This study finds that students who identified as transgender, Latinx, or Black were at a higher risk for anxiety than other students. Can you explain the reason why these groups of people are more vulnerable to anxiety?
Yeah, there could be a really long answer to that, and I'll spare you the super long answer. But I think you know, one of the ways I think about anxiety is it's, first of all, it's an equal opportunity symptom, just meaning that it affects everybody. It doesn't matter who you are. Race, ethnicity, you know, sexual orientation, whatever, however people identify, it goes across the board. However, we do know that some people experience it more than others. And the one of the ways I think about it is that there are specific populations who face different obstacles, or people, you know, individuals from underprivileged groups. So you think about even the K-12 education system. It has been designed and geared, and we've learned over the years that it benefits a certain group, a certain population, the majority culture. So what happens is people that don't fit the majority mold oftentimes have greater hardship. And so they're not able to demonstrate as well what they know on a standardized test, for instance. Or they may you talk about first generation college students who they come from family backgrounds that don't exactly understand college or the challenges that come with that. And so they may face harder difficulties because they're not doing what maybe their family assumed that they would do, or that they're engaging, they're here, but their family has financial needs at home. And so now it's, I need to do well in college and I'm trying to help my family back home, and I have to do well because if I lose this, if I mess up at this, my whole family's depending on me. Whereas a lot of students, it's, you know, other students, it's not that case. You know, they don't do well in college, oh, well, I'll drop out and go to a different college. You know, so it affects different people differently. I think about, you know, individuals who identify as LGBT, they, you know, a lot of this has to do with, you know, a lot of the stressors that we see with coming out or coming out with family or friends or, you know, living in a culture, living in a heteronormative culture. And granted, we talk about these things a lot more than we did 20 years ago. That doesn't mean it's still not very challenging and difficult to be a marginalized individual. And so, and to be, you know, a lot of times people assume that you're heterosexual. I mean, we've grown a lot in that, but there's these kind of these slights that happen all day long for a lot of people. And those can, when life is already stressful and anxiety producing, but then this is kind of happening in the background or the foreground, it can make life even more difficult. We also know that individuals may be, because of their cultural background, they may be less likely to reach out for mental health care. So some groups find it really easy. It's more part of the culture, but some students will feel like their cultural background says, hey, like, you got to deal with your stuff on your own. Don't share that stuff outside the family. It brings shame. And so a lot of groups are less likely, less inclined to reach out and get support when actually that would be really beneficial for them.
Since there is an increasing number of students with anxiety, how are colleges supposed to adequately meet their needs?
I think we're seeing that colleges, universities are being called to do far more than they used to when it comes to mental health support for students. You know, in the past, it was always the brick and mortar, kind of traditional psychotherapy. You have a problem, you need to go over to that office over there and talk to those people and they'll help you. And we still have that. And, you know, I know the UC system alone has hired a lot of psychologists, across the board, really, in terms of hirings that they've had. But we also know it's far bigger than that. And so a big part of it, too, and one of the ways to think about it goes from intervention. So intervention is kind of your traditional psychotherapy where you're intervening, trying to help somebody already struggling. But it's also prevention. So what is the campus doing to prevent the anxiety, to prevent the depression, to prevent, you know, we even see this with things like sexual assault or discrimination that happens on campus. So what are we doing to educate, train, and equip our students across the board? I feel that a lot of students come to campus, and I talked about, you know, that everyone gets a trophy, kind of the ways they've been protected from negative emotion and failure through their upbringing. So in ways, it's fallen on the colleges to kind of teach them, hey, life is really hard and you're going to experience these painful things here. And here are some ways that you can manage and cope with this. And so we're seeing it on college campuses. Of course, it's part of the scope of like a counseling and psychological services department. But we're seeing it way beyond that, too, because it's not just something that one department should support. It's really a campus-wide effort. So that what I mean by that is other departments, and I know like UCSB has other departments on campus that are supporting and being involved in education and outreach and engagement with students to try to help them manage anxiety or depression or things like that. Yeah, and so it's a much larger outreach and engagement. We talk about even faculty, the relationships that faculty have with students. How can we educate and train faculty on a student with anxiety emails you and says they're really struggling or they can't, they're panicking or they're having a panic attack in your class? What's an effective way to respond? You know, one of the things that we see with some faculty is that, you know, have been raised in a different generation are like, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You got this. Like, for many students, that's actually does more harm than good for them because these emotions are real. It's not like these are fake or they're making, you know, causing a scene for no reason just because they want an extension on a paper. Like, no, these emotions are real. And they're so real. It's almost like, you know, we used to experience anxiety in the forest with a bear chasing us. You know, for a lot of our students, it's almost like there's this invisible bear all over campus. There's this constant threat of your future, you know, your grades, your tests, your social environment. So we really have to take seriously these emotions are real. So a lot of this has to do with educating and training and equipping faculty on how to effectively engage with their students. And the last part, too, is consultation and collaboration. So how is like the counseling and psychological service, how are they opening themselves up to be a consultant for the campus? So what I mean by that is there's a faculty member who's struggling with the student or a staff member who's struggling with the student, wanting to help them. How can they reach out to a mental health professional to get some ideas or support on ways to engage with that student? To sum up this answer, it's of course it's the brick and mortar, but also it's the outreach, the engagement, the preventative strategies, and being an active consultant, having a great relationship with staff and faculty.
How can we work to reduce anxiety in college students? Do you make any recommendations to your students or clients for activities or other things that could help them reduce their own stress and anxiety?
Yeah, that's great. You know, one of the things I think that is really helpful, a lot of students that will come in and they will sometimes feel like they are the only person that feels this way. And one of the most powerful interventions I do as a psychologist is say, you know, wow, like this is really significant. And did you know that so many of your peers feel the same way? You know, so they feel like they're the special case, that they are the ones that's truly broken. The reality is anxiety is ubiquitous right now. It's really affecting a broad range of individuals. So normalizing that anxiety, validating that anxiety can be really effective. I think helping them recognize this race to the bottom culture, this, hey, do you realize that there is this, we're in a culture right now that rewards you punishing yourself and overstretching yourself. And so helping them step back and think, okay, you know, I have students that will come in and say, they'll have 20 units and two jobs and they're like, help me not be stressed out. And part of me is like, yeah, if you have that much and you want to get A's on everything and you know, you're going to be overwhelmed. And so helping them drop off some of those things and let go of this overachieving mindset that gets so rewarded by our society and by our parents and by our, you know, by our employers and things like that. And really what I like to do too, is I like to connect them back to their values. Like, okay, so you're feeling this pressure to be super successful, but what do you actually care about in your life? Who's important? What's important? You know, is it your family, your friends, your faith, your wanting to help people? Like, let's get back to your reasons for actually being a student, because it's, you know, I say this to students on our campus, and I'm sure it's for same for students here. Like, UCSB is great, Westmont's great, but your life is so much bigger than these 4 years. And so how do you stay connected with, you know, who you really are, your values, what you really care about? The other thing I do with students that I really recommend is I encourage them to make space for negative emotion. This, going through your college years, this is one of the most stressful and significant life transitions that you will ever go through. And so I encourage them to make space for negative emotion. So you will feel inadequate, uncertain, upset, sad, depressed. Like, these are emotions that come with the territory. So how can you create space in your life to feel those things and not crumble? Because what happens is people feel these things and go, something is wrong, I have to do something about it. The reality is sometimes we have to feel these negative emotions. That's why you hear so much of things like mindfulness. You know, that's such a buzzword these days. And the reason why it's good is mindfulness is good because we're so plugged in all the time, and it's so helpful for us to stop, take a deep breath, notice what we're feeling. Wow, I feel really discouraged today. Or wow, I'm feeling just really overwhelmed. Let me take a couple deep breaths and remember my life is bigger than this. You know, my life is bigger than these tests. I'm going to do the best I can. I can't control what I can't control, but I'm going to manage what I can, and I'm going to keep moving forward. And through that, life is still going to be hard, but then we're not engaging in behaviors that sometimes make it worse. Because when we get anxious, we do things that make it worse sometimes. Like, you're worried about a test, so instead you decide to go spend 20 hours in the library, and that studying for 20 hours is not helpful because you're so anxious you're not actually studying, or you're so anxious that you procrastinate, or you drink a lot on the weekends, or you engage in other behaviors that aren't helpful. You know, so how can we own that life is hard and also kind of take control of our behaviors that we use to cope and manage when we don't feel well?
That was Dr. Eric Nelson, Director of Counseling and Psychological Services at Westmont College. Here at Santa Barbara, we have a number of resources to assist with anxiety disorder, one of them being Counseling and Psychological Services, also known as CAPS, whose 24-hour hotline can be called at 805-893-4411. This is KCSB's Lizzie Mao.